Hello, welcome to the Dot Matrix. I'm Sean.
I'm Justin.
And I elected to start this podcast.
Episode 35. I was thinking probably because I fumbled the last start last time, I think, pretty badly.
And yeah, there's a little bit of stuttering going on. But you fumbled it.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry. Anyway.
Wow.
No, seriousness. So we were one step closer to trying to get two microphones recorded on GarageBand.
I know, our two snowball mics look so cute together in, on the same desk and all, but eventually we'll get them both to work.
Yeah, there must be a way. And if it means, like, using something else than GarageBand, we can look at that too. But
and if any of the three people who listen to this actually know what to do, just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Send us an email. info@thedotmatrix.com. I like saying it that way. I don't know why.
Well, we have almost 100 people on our Dot Matrix Facebook group.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
But now we're starting to sound like those two on Saturday Night Live who do the NPR
right, yeah.
show.
Right.
We could talk like this, right?
Sweaty balls. Or was what? I forgot it. Muffin tops or something.
Muffin tops, yeah.
Betty White said.
Yeah. That was a good one. So, it's been 5 weeks.
Yes.
There's been a lot of stuff going on, and the usual kind of shenanigans from our federal government.
Yes, and we've been out and about excavating, or that's the wrong word. We've been going to tennis matches. I don't even, I don't know why I'm not speaking proper English today. I don't know why we're not recording.
You're high on sushi. Day.
Yes, I'm, yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. Last time we did this, we had Indian. And today we had sushi from that great place around the corner from here.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Ginger sushi, y'all. On the drive.
Y'all. So topic number one, let's get to it because it's right on our computer. We went on to this...
Yeah.
Website on the CBC website, and we'll send everyone the link to it. But it's just again, like, the big thing going, well, not the big thing, but, you know, the federal government keeps, the conservative government keeps putting their foot in their mouth all the time, eh? Unlike, not unlike what I'm doing today, stuttering pretty badly. But I was on the news, is on the website today about Stockwell Day, who's always a font and wealth of funny things to comes out of his mouth. I was freaked out when they said Treasury Board President Stockwell Day. Like,
ugh.
Treasury Board President means he's the one who makes the final decisions on releasing money.
Yeah.
Like, that's scary. Anyways, yeah, but totally. He was talking about, apparently he was in either some press conference of some kind saying that they're going to spend billions of dollars on new prisons, even though the crime statistics show that crime's going down, saying that he doesn't believe the statistics, and he says he's been told, and he knows that there's people who don't report crimes, and who are, and I think that's true. There's a lot of crime that happens that people don't report, but you know, like, it's just, like, the fact that you discount statistics in a broad sense, just, and create policy. I mean, deciding to spend billions on prisons is a big social policy decision.
Yeah.
And to not have any facts, and when the article was so funny, it goes, when questioned by perplexed reporters, Day did not elaborate on what information source he was basing his claims, but said he would provide figures to them later. And so, like, if you're going to make this announcement and you know this is your stance, why do you not have a statistic at hand to just say, you know, like, we know from this report or this study, and of course, then it has to come out from another minister. The justice minister comes out with a statement later on, it says, and it says, they're quoting statistics from 2004 survey from Stats Canada, talking about how people, like, 39% don't report, I think, you know, petty crime or something, and you know, 80-something percent of sexual assaults don't get reported. You know, we're all, you know, I don't discount those facts, right?
Yeah.
And then later, at the very end of the article, Stockwell Day talks about the census and talks about how, you know, they have to get rid of the long-form survey, which is the other big controversy, which we can get into as well. And then he goes and says that he discounts statistics that are more than a year old, because in today's information age, those are irrelevant.
Untenable.
Untenable, yeah, sorry. Untenable in today's information age. I'm like,
unbelievable.
I mean, understanding trends in in population has nothing to do with how fast people get information from the internet. They're two different topics, person. And the whole fact that his other minister quotes stats from 2004 to support his own claim about crime, yeah. And then he discounts it right away by saying, well, statistics from 2004 mean nothing. I'm not putting out across how absurd I find this, because I don't know, I don't think it's coming out in my voice very properly, but it is absurd.
Well, I think you're in delirium mode. I think that's what this causes, right? When people just spout off what they want to believe and don't back it up with anything. It's very Republican, you know, it's what people do down in the States when they're on Fox News. They just don't base anything on any type of facts. And they just want to say what they think should be the case. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're upset. And it's good that you brought up the census, because getting anyone to do something voluntarily when they're not, you know, they're not receiving any sort of benefit for doing it, other than, you know, there's going to be some who do things for the greater good because they believe it's right.
Right.
Like the census. But who's going to be doing the census if they don't have to?
Well, you think about it, like, the long-form census will be equated to if you get a customer survey after you've stayed at a Delta hotel. You know, well, unless I have something really bad to say. And one of the reports said that. I forget, some conservative minister said, well, you know, businesses use surveys all the time to base their information on stuff. And remember, I think I said this to you yesterday, I said, we're not talking about whether or not, you know, people like the taste of new Coke. We're talking about important, you know, information about urban planning, about transit use, about, you know, and they said, Yuan, the question is too intrusive, and the fact that you might get jail time is unacceptable. Untenable. I mean, they don't use except they use much more stronger language, but one, they can't state a case anywhere where any Canadian has been imprisoned because they did not fill in the long form census. So how do you keep quoting that if no one's ever gone to jail? And two, they quote things like, you know, I should never be asked to tell you how long it takes me to get to work. That's too personal.
Yeah.
And there's no relevance to public policy. Yeah. I'm like, hello.
And I think they're doing this to appease their base. When they asked Clement about it on Power and Politics on CBC, they're like, come on. You know, you keep talking about all these constituents, like citizens of Canada, that are complaining in this outrage of the census every 5 years. They have to be asked all these intrusive questions. And she's like, well, who are these people? You know, like, isn't it true that you're trying to keep your base, you know, your conservative base,
right,
by doing this? This was like a...
We should try to find that clip. I wonder if it's clips online. We can try to post a link to it.
We can, if it's possible to link to iTunes, we can find it.
Oh, right, because they have a podcast. I'm gonna remember myself to download that.
Actually, yeah, I got to point out to you, too, because it was... When you hear Tony Clement under the gun, and he just replays the stock answers, why are you doing this? Well, we have worked for months with Statistics Canada and figured out a process where we can limit it to the short-term census and don't have to be bothering people with intrusive questions with the threat of jail time or fines. And she's like, yeah, but it was a guest host. I don't know her name. But she says, but why don't you just... has anyone gone to jail? Well, no. Or, you know, well, you know, we just don't want people under the threat of that. And she's like, well, why don't you just remove the threat of jail times and fines?
Yes.
He's like, we've worked with Statistics Canada and to find a way, you know, and he just repeats the same answer over and he's not giving you, but she came at him pretty hard. But like I was saying to you the other day, but yeah, we have to post a version for people to hear it.
Yeah, I have to see that. Well, and the funny thing, too, is they talk about appeasing the base. And then at the end of this article that we're just referencing about Stockwell Day, at the very last sentence, Day also acknowledged he has only heard directly from three people on the census issue in his constituency.
Three
people. And this issue's been around for 5 months. Or not 5 months, 5 weeks, like a month and a half or something, right? Yeah. Like, and only in that time span have you heard from three people.
Well, we've seen this pattern, right? They always bring these controversies onto themselves. Prorogation. The arrogance with the Afghanistan papers. Like, it's just over and over again. Let's see how we can almost screw ourselves in the press.
See, and, this is it. Like, I don't get... Like, okay, you know, the Afghan papers, I could see how that could be damning and how can a controversy can brew from that.
Yeah.
You know, reproductive health for women, I can see how that can be a hot button issue.
Right.
But for fuck's sakes, this is census.
I know, it's census.
How the hell do you create a very visceral, emotional reaction to the census? But guess who's able to do it? The conservative government. It's and amazing. They're all powerful in that sense. I can't believe it.
Well, like I was saying, you know, I don't think filling out the census is fun. You know, I don't like some of the questions. But when you know what it's going towards and the fact that, you know, maybe don't add any more questions or make the questions more personal than they are.
Right.
But... don't just, and it's just such a one fell swoop, just, nope, we are getting rid of it, and you know, it's going to be voluntary. Who's going to do it?
You know, speaking about census and surveys, like, I have not, in this whole 5 week process, I have not seen, and I haven't been watching the news, it's, you know, the summertime, and you're out and about, or whatever, and I haven't been watching the news, but I have not seen a survey of Canadians saying, an opinion poll saying, how many of you feel the census is obtrusive? Yeah. And like, I haven't seen that. How come no one's done it?
I don't know. Not even Mansbridge, huh?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. This is a perfect time. Just tell what the Canadian public think. And my gut is, I think, if you do that survey, one, if you ask them, you know, Canadians, how many Canadians, how did you know that there was jail time or fines associated with not filling in the long-form census? I'm sure 80% of Canadians would say, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, my gut is, I'm sure, again, about that high percentage of people, maybe not 80, but like a strong majority would be like, I don't care. I'll just fill it out. It's like, I don't find it obtrusive. I don't find it in a gross way. Maybe some questions are like, oh, that's kind of personal. But, you know, you could rationalize it if you thought about it that, okay, a municipality might need to know this. Health authorities might need to know this sort of thing, right?
Right.
But, you know, and then, like, I wonder... If you think about this, it's spin in a very positive way. Maybe this is a whole hoax by Statistics Canada and the Conservative government to make everyone think about the census. So when it comes out in and then maybe like months from now, they'll actually not ditch the long form census, and everyone will remember it. And then when you get the form, they'll get a higher response because people are going to be upset that this almost got canceled. So we better fill it out. You know, like it may actually get a higher response rate the next one.
You know, it's an interesting theory.
It'd be really funny.
Because we always see how that happens that way, right? It's just so reckless, though. Don't you find?
Well, I mean, I don't know how many people, you know, take statistics in or what you learn in high school statistics or even when I was in university taking statistics. But, like, it's pretty clear. You change how the methodology of how you collect the survey, information... You wreck the ability to compare with previous years. You just do. Like, you know, either whether or not you ask the question differently or you change the methodology of how you gather the information, you break that tie with all the historical data. And it's disturbing. Like, and the long-form census is what collects probably a huge mass amount of information about of describing who we are as a country. And to not be able to see who we are as a country over the span of how many decades that this survey's been done in its current form, you lose that ability to compare ourselves to where we were and where we are today. Like, it makes no sense to recklessly ruin
abolish.
The continuity of that kind of historical data. Yeah. Like, it's... I can't believe it.
Yeah, I really can't. I think it's worth forcing an election over. I totally believe that. Now the leading guy from the census, like the Statistics Canada guy, stepped down.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like, what else do we have to do? I mean, they asked him on the Power and Politics, like, you know, like, or Tony Clement, rather, was spouting off examples of around the world where this has happened. And, like, in Britain, they've just decided they're going to abolish it next year entirely or something. And she's like, but wasn't that due to budget shortfall?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's none of these examples he'll give is for the same reason why they're deciding to get rid of the census. You, like, right.
And from what I hear, the U.S. tried a voluntary census, and then they turned back to the mandatory census the year later because the response rate was abysmal.
Of course. And of course. And she brought that up with him, and he says, well, that was just one experience. That was one example. It's like...
Yeah, but the closest example to our country.
I know. It's... These guys are clowns. Like, it's... I don't even know what to say about these people that are supposedly running this country. I don't know. It's just... It boggles the mind. So yeah, we'll send a link on that too. Census thing.
Oh, jeez.
See, we always do this, right? Like, we bring up all these things that just... totally pick our ass.
What we're saying, like I said in the elevator, that we should start a blog or a website that says like the shit the conservatives say, or a Facebook page,
or even a Twitter.
Yeah,
because it's just quotes, right? Like one after the other after the other. Yeah, we should do that. Maybe we'll both do it. Like, we'll look for stuff every day. Like this quote right here that you said, right? Quoting that. Older data older than a year is, quote, untenable in today's information age. So basically, screw everything before 2010. You know? That doesn't matter. We're talking about right now. We're not talking about last year.
It's like saying, if you tell me you hate peas immediately when you think it, it's more valid than if you tell me it 2 days from now. Or something, you know what I mean?
Or two days earlier. From now, I better say it again, or I might...
not believe it. It's not true anymore.
No, it's just not true anymore.
What you hear and when you hear it are two different things.
Oh, boy.
Oh, gosh.
But speaking of government stuff,
mm-hmm.
politics and war... I was going to bring up WikiLeaks,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I honestly haven't actually really done a lot of research on it. I just know the basic, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of official, previously classified, currently classified documents were leaked.
Like 9,100 pages or 91,000 pages of documents, right?
Apparently they have... Excuse me. They have 90-something thousand pages, but they've released something like 75,000 so far, and there's more to come.
Oh, okay.
But I guess the question about this is it correct? Like, what moral stance should you have about that happening during a current war, the current administration who's continuing on with that war, when you release... those documents with that information and supposedly putting those fighting for our freedom in peril, is it morally right to do that?
See, I wonder if that's even a fair question to ask, because I don't know what the data is. The only thing I know is that there's something about Pakistan intelligence being, I guess, helpful to the Taliban or something like that. That's one thing that's out there. The other thing was about four Canadian soldiers who were reportedly killed in battle, where apparently some of the documents said that they were reportedly killed by friendly fire, of which the Canadian military totally denounces being false, and that the papers that were released, their argument was an initial report. And later, that happens all the time in war, where you get an initial reporting because you heard it from a third person,
right.
And then you finally get the real story, and then you make a correction, and sometimes the correction doesn't get put all the way through to the initial paperwork. Like, it's an addendum that's put forward, not they don't cross out and change the paperwork.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But I think, I mean, unless the papers sort of say, okay, the secret military positions for each troop are here, here, and here, and they're going to be there tomorrow, right. So if you're going to go kill them now.
Right, right.
Which I don't think any of this information is, one, it's probably more than a year old, so the information is tenable at best.
I know.
So, but you know what I mean? Like to say, you know, we're putting our men and women's lives in danger, like maybe in some peripheral way, but like in the real urgent way that they talk about in that argument and they infer,
yeah.
I think that's an unfair question because unless that information says that, you know, Barack Obama is going to visit Baghdad next week and this is his itinerary and this is his route of his motorcade,
mm-hmm.
like, you know,
I know
I don't
mean.
Know.
I know what you mean. I think there's a mix of both. I don't think there's anything that detailed for future stuff.
Right.
I think it lists a lot of things that kind of illustrate what's happening on the ground. Like, for example, like this billions of dollars that the states have been giving to Pakistan, like you said, to fight insurgency when actually it's going to fund the insurgency.
See, and I don't see, like, to me, I'm like, I think that's important. If I was the one who
important
saw that,
to know.
I think it's important to know. I think it hurts the men and women in that maybe you feel like you're not fighting for the right people or people who you're fighting for have lost their way.
Yeah.
And getting the information out there in the light of day, you know, it is a way for people who can make the change to go, oh crap, we have gone astray. And let's try to bring it back, you know. Like, it's never too late to make corrections. It's never too late to own up to mistakes. It's never too late to sort of take the high road. You know, I know people say, well, sometimes you just gotta fight dirty with, you know, fight down with everyone else, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm not a war person. I'm not a military person. So I can't answer the context because I've never been in it. But, you know, my leaning is towards not war than war. So for me, it's like, you know, if you're going to be fighting something, you better have a damn good reason and be mm-hmm. and always take the moral high ground enough for that to even be a possibility, you know, an option.
I think it's a good thing that this stuff comes out because, well, with war, and especially, you know, when you're dealing with the biggest military force in the world, if there's something that can give you another insight into what's really happening, I think we're all the better for it. Like, yeah, it's embarrassing to the administration. It's you know, supposedly harmful to those who are doing the fighting. But at the same time, it's like we're just more aware. And the fact that it really is telling, you know, when the Secretary of Defense or, you know, the people who are the high echelons of the military are playing down what's in these documents, I think just shows that they're just damage control. Like, I think they're crazy concerned about what's been released because there's a reason why it wasn't released. Like, they would release this information freely if there was point to.
Yep.
But there's a point not to, and I think the fact that that this stuff comes out, I think shocked them. And I think they said, oh, we got to just put a brave face on this. And we got to say that, you know, there's no real revelations here. I think there's a lot of revelations here. Like, I think from what I've heard, which isn't a ton of stuff, but what I've heard already is just that it's paint. Like, this one guy, I think the leader of WikiLeaks, like the owner,
one of the co-founders?
Co-founders. He was on Democracy Now.
Mm.
And he said that this actually demonstrates what is happening in this war, like that you don't get from any reporting, you know, it's showing how badly the war is going, you know, because you always hear that, oh, the surge is working or, you know, and in some respects it might be, but overall, if it shows very categorically, like the Taliban is stronger than they've ever been since they were first ousted, then that's a huge problem, you know, because now we're going on, well, some people say longer than Vietnam, but that's depending where you start Vietnam. you know, because the states were in there long before they started fighting there. But if it is from the first, you know, first shots of Vietnam to when it actually ended, that if we've gone longer than that, then that, and we're not getting anywhere, and I mean we as in the West, then, like, what are we doing? Like, I don't know. I think it's really bad news for the military personally.
Well, I always think about, you know, the old saying where, you know, if your mother wouldn't approve, you shouldn't do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but when you think about, like, what you do in the world, and, you know, when you tell people about it, it's probably because you're kind of ashamed of it, you know? And I think, you know, like you said, the military position or the White House position has been, oh, well, you know, that's, nothing is new here.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, I think that's probably the strongest thing you can probably say if you can back it up, you know? Like I think the way you combat it is that, yeah, we told you this. Like, you know, we're open about it. We're transparent. Like, transparency is the biggest way to counterattack what's happening, only if you can back it up and if you have been transparent, right? But I don't really have any idea. Maybe they released something at some point and it's sort of, you know, Friday afternoon at 4:35 in the afternoon and no reporters came to this press conference, or it was released in a new press crop. You know, people do that just to let it die, right?
Yeah.
But, and I'm sure that didn't happen if this kind of information was out there. But, you know, I think, you know, the way you combat these leaks is actually by being transparent. Because what's there to leak if you tell everyone everything, right? Then the leaks don't exist because there isn't anything to leak.
Yeah, exactly. It's crap. I think we're just smarter than that, you know?
I don't mean to be righteous. I mean, we all make mistakes, but, you know, and I think you should, if you're confident in your position and in your vision of where you want to go, and confident with who you are, I'm talking about, like, people say this in, you know, in therapy sessions to their clients, but it's true, I think, in a holistic way as a country or whatever, is that, you know, you should be okay to tell people when things have gone wrong or when you've done, you know, or whatever, but, you know, and, like, if you have to, you know, do something of a, you know, probably, you know, not terribly honest way of fighting something, or I'm using my wrong words, like, I'm still struggling with my words today.
That's okay.
But, like, you know, you could do, you know, like, you could, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that, like, if you kind of are questioning whether or not you should tell people about something, about what you've done,
yeah,
you probably shouldn't have done it, right? Like, yeah. Ask yourself that question before you do it. You know, I don't know. Like, again, this is a really tough thing to sort of say in a war context. So I appreciate the fact that I've not been in a war, haven't decided on a war, haven't decided to send sons and daughters and husbands and, you know, grandkids to war. So I, you know, it's hard to pass to give this kind of judgment in that circumstance. But it's at the same time, you kind of have, if you be like them, have you really won the war? Right, you know?
Right. No, I think this is just the beginning. You know, like this Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks guy, like you're saying, he's not allowed in. Well, if he goes to the States, he'll probably be arrested, right?
Probably.
Well, I don't know. It takes people to have some courage and actually do this because they feel it's important enough, you know? As much, you know, I couldn't look at this guy and say he's a traitor. You know, a lot of people think that's what he's done is patriotic. A lot of people think it's treasonous. So we're both learning words today. I don't know. Like, really? I mean, even if you were in the military or you didn't agree, could you not kind of see why he's trying to do this? Like,
well, you're fighting for the reason why he does it, right? Isn't that not the case, in theory? Like,
yeah,
<you're...
laughs> exactly. And then the irony is just lost on them, I guess. But I don't know. I think it's good. They compare it to, you know, the Pentagon Papers of, you know, during Vietnam, which I don't really actually know much about. But I think it was just papers that, you know, they didn't have internet or email or whatever. But you think these were papers about Vietnam that came out during Vietnam that shocked a lot of people, like,
right,
had information that, you know, like this, that was like, really? Is that really what's going on?
Well, and but I think the problem with comparing it to that is that in today's, you know, back when the Vietnam War was happening, you think about the culture that was out there, the stories that were being told, the decade in which it was, it's different than 2010, you know? Like, this world is a little bit more violent, the culture is a little bit more accepting of it, you know, there's a little bit more rough around the edges, and so there isn't the same kind of sticker shock, so to speak, as there is with the revelations coming out in the Pentagon Papers, at least from limited facts I know about both.
You know what, sometimes I think the opposite with I think we're more immune to the evilness that we see in the world. But I don't think there's more of it. I think we hear about it more and quicker.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you think of what's gone on in the pre-internet age, I think it's stuff that's always gone on, but now we're just finding out about it more. That's my take.
Well, and I think by finding out about it more, it's sort of like when you see your first horror movie. You might get really shocked, but then you see your 100th one, you kind of go, well, you see where they CGI'd this together, or that's fake ketchup, or that's ketchup, fake blood kind of thing, right?
Right.
I think that's happening a little.
I agree, too. I agree with that, I think.
But what I wonder is, if the guy who gets all the press is the co-founder, who's the other co-founder? Do they ever talk about the other guy? Who's the other dude? Oh, or dudette who created WikiLeaks with him? You know, I just wonder. And the interesting story as well, which isn't really a part of this, is again, not about the content of it, but is the fact that when WikiLeaks got these papers, you know, they released it a week before, or a couple of weeks, whatever time before they announced these papers to the New York Times, The Guardian, and some German paper, and the fact that one of the reports were saying that, you know, they were really smart because WikiLeaks is not a journalistic entity. It's a conduit for people to safely leak information that needs to be out in public domain. So in the end, this Julian Assange guy is a hacker.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He's not a journalist.
Right.
He and his partner, whoever the partner is,
I can't find it.
Created a site where hackers who may find information, or people who have the information who want to release it and leak it anonymously, can do so safely.
Yes.
And so, you know, they're tech geeks, right?
For sure.
And so they're not reporters. They don't know what's important. They don't know what they're being leaked. So, but they, you know, they have enough sense to know what's important and what's like, you know. And so giving it to these, the commentary was saying that giving it to these three very reputable journalistic entities to critically analyze the information and to provide their take on reporting on what the facts are and what the important facts are was a real smart move, because it provides, it'd be one thing just to be able to create this avenue where you can leak information, but access to information is only one angle. The other angle is how you interpret it, how you analyze it, what's your perspective on that data, right? And so partnering with those journalistic entities has created this interesting partnership, because in many ways those shops, news shops, are losing money, losing ad revenue. They don't have the time or the money or the resources to actually do the kind of in-depth research that needs to get done to find and to uncover those documents. And that's why WikiLeaks is there, right? Or WikiLeaks is there to make that happen, because technology in the way it is today can allow that to happen in a very cheap way, right? So I found that to be an interesting story, is the fact that this whole new process is in place where maybe we can get a little bit more cross-cutting, a little bit more critical, a little bit more in-depth reporting from news outlets now, because they can actually channel the little resources they have to actually reporting on stuff they get, as opposed to trying to get that information too. As long as WikiLeaks can authenticate their documents, which my understanding is that's part of what they do, they authenticate things, right? And then leaving it up to the journalist to actually do the critical thinking on it.
Right.
It's like asking a tech geek to strategize a national economic policy. Yeah. Like, or, you know, a policy on poverty. Like, that's two separate parts of your brain.
No.
And you can't do both, right?
So. No.
So it's, I thought it was a cool way of handling it.
That's a very good point, indeed. It's funny, you know, we're going to WikiLeaks right now. I haven't even looked at this site. It's funny, it looks exactly like Wikipedia. Is that the idea?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
They're not related, right? They're two very separate entities, from my understanding.
Yeah, but it looks just like it. That's interesting. Huh. But I guess, you know, it's kind of like a format, really, like a template.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to be reading up on this. There's like there's like 3 days in a row on Democracy Now that I've been listening to, and they've been talking to Julian Assange, and, you know, obviously Democracy Now, for example, is like a kind of a left-leaning reporting agency, right? But I don't know. I think they report a lot of stuff that happens, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think obviously you know where that organization stands, you know, when you talk about like neocons and all these assholes and stuff, but I think it's a pretty good alternative news show, so-called, you know.
Right.
But it's pretty huge. Like, it's heard all over the world, you know.
Right.
I like checking it out every now and again.
Yeah, I haven't gone. I listened to it a bit, but I haven't really, not that much at all, actually. So I should go back.
It's pretty cool. Like, they talk to a lot of people, like Jesse Jackson. Like, it's not just like fringe, you know, people. Like, it's like people in the mainstream, right? Like, they'll talk to a lot of reporters from around the world, and they'll talk to just people involved with different art organizations and things. So I don't know. I think it's definitely worth a. I like to go to iTunes and just see what the main topics are, and if there's something I'm interested in. They've been talking a lot about this WikiLeaks stuff. So.
Mm.
And the website is really good. You can just watch the video, right? They do it every day. So, you know, we'll post a link about that too.
Okay.
So, what else we got here?
I want to tell a story.
Oh, yeah, because you were going to... Is this what you were going to tell me before?
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
Because it relates to online Wikipedia or WikiLeaks and that sort of stuff, in that it's about sort of technology and different things, right? It was so funny. I was saying to you today that, you know, I've been really interested in sort of... and re-interested in this sort of connection between the online world and the online social media conversations that happen either through Twitter and Facebook and what have you, and the real world and how it all connect, you know, and a lot of my thinking at work lately has been around how do you leverage dialogue in the social world, in social web world, mm-hmm. with dialogue on important issues in the real world? How do you connect the two and that sort of thing? And so I've been, you know, when I do a little bit of Twitter, it's because of my work account, or it's, you know, Facebook, I've done some stuff on our organizational Facebook page, you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, I got re-interested again just the other day because I had that late night with my friend who I was telling you about the other day, which we won't get into. But you know, I find her really fascinating because she's one of the people I've met in the last, I've been going for maybe 5 years now, actually, think about it, and who's always really, as far as I've known her, has been really, as a personal level, as an individual, you know, have blogs, has websites, has a Twitter feed, and she was talking about sort of, you know, what kind of conversation did she want to contribute to online based for her, you know, and we're talking about authenticity, and I was thinking about, a lot about being your authentic self, and when you communicate online, how do you keep it authentic to who you are? And then she was saying that she read an interesting New York Times article about how this woman who wrote a book and her publisher told her to get onto Twitter so to help promote it, did so and got addicted to Twitter. And she suddenly realized one day she was sitting there having a moment with her daughter, listening to something, some downloaded, you know, recording. And she was in the moment, but then she realized she saw herself get disassociated from the moment, thinking about how would she Twitter about it, right? You know, like, and is the Twitter self the real self, or how do you, or does, because you want to be observing or saying something in 140 characters about what you're experiencing, does that change how you experience it?
Right? Because like, you're always thinking, how would I Twitter this?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. And so I thought that was really fascinating. And so I had all that going in my mind. And then the same friend sent me a link to an association who does business communications, right? And there was something about, you know, they had a program where you could apply as a nonprofit to get some help with your social marketing, right? And, you know, the organization I'm with, we're actually doing pretty well about that. And I think we're doing a good job, or a fair job, trying to get into it. Mm-hmm. And we were working with consultants about this anyway, so we don't really need it, but I forwarded it to some other people. But I thought, let me go to this website, let's take a look. And I went to the website and I took a look and I looked at, well, what's this organization? Who's on their board of directors? And I looked at the board of directors. And what caught my eye was, I mean, there's a lot of people who do PR and communications work for large, you know, either health authorities or large corporations or whatever. But there's a couple of people who are doing independent work, like they're like one-person consultancy shops, right? Mm-hmm. And there's one who caught my eye who was a fairly young woman, not for the reasons why you think I've caught my eye.
I was just thinking that.
Well, I wouldn't say I didn't, but that wasn't what, you know, that wasn't the main reason. But the fact that it seemed like she was a one-person consulting company working with some companies, but also with some nonprofits kind of thing. So I thought, and in our world, we try to work with a lot of consultants who work with nonprofits. And one of the areas in which you don't have a lot of consultants is the marketing and communications. And that ends up being me.
Okay.
And it would be great to have more people who knew that PR stuff and who did marketing strategy and that sort of stuff. So I ended up Googling her name to see what her company was. And I got to the link of the company. And I thought, oh, interesting. And then one of the Google searches was also LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, yeah.
Like she had a LinkedIn account. And I went to LinkedIn and I said, oh my God, she has like 12 contacts, common contacts with me. Hmm. So I thought, like the world, the online world is telling me she's someone I should know.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, and, I get it. Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I started an email and I crafted this awkward email saying, you don't know me, but this, you know, and basically recounting the story in a summarized version that we should connect, like we should make
it's,
a connection.
It's
like
it's written
in the stars. and I got kind of excited, like this is my first foray into reaching out into cyberspace, connecting with someone who I have no idea who this is, and she has no idea who I am. Like it's sort of like it's one thing to meet someone at a party and realize you have the same friends in common or something, and then you have the conversation. Then
right.
You know, so
right.
This is kind of an awkward new world for me. I'd never done this, right? So, but I thought, it seems so right. I mean, I should meet this person, find out what she does, and maybe there could be a good connection in terms of further work together professionally, right? And then I get a response near the end of the day saying, hi there, and I quoted a couple of people who we were connected with, and then she says, oh, you know, I actually don't know the people you're saying, but it looks like we have a lot of common connections around stuff, so I don't know what you're looking for, but let me know and maybe I can direct you to some people. And wow. And I don't do consulting work anymore. I've actually gone back to paid employment kind of thing, right? And I'm like, oh, weird. I thought LinkedIn, you only knew people who you knew, like, you know what I mean? Like you were, and then I went back to LinkedIn and I logged into my LinkedIn again and looked her up. And then I'm like, oh, I read it wrong. It was Justin knows these 12 people who know people who then know her.
So you missed like two stages. Yeah, yeah. Oh my God.
And I said, oh, third level connection, third degrees of separation isn't as close as I thought it was. And I laughed out loud and I felt so, oh my God, she got this really weird email that actually makes no sense. And I'm like, but I thought it was really nice of her to actually respond, you know? So I responded back and I said, hey, thanks for responding. I just checked my LinkedIn again, and you can tell I'm not that well versed in LinkedIn because I didn't quite see it, right?
Yeah.
And then I tried to make, I just thought, oh, and I said, well, you know, it's too bad you're not doing any more consulting work because I'm always looking for basically people, consultants to connect with in this sort of practice area.
Right.
So she actually responded again when we were at the gym just now and said that, oh, you know, Hey, cool, no worries. And there's a couple people who I have in mind, so if you don't mind, I'll pass your information to them. So, and one has already emailed me.
Oh, well, that's
so you
cool.
never know. I might try to connect with one of them or them and see what they do. And so it might end up being a
not a
positive
loss.
Thing in yeah. the end, but yeah. just that was so funny. I'm like, oh, yeah, we don't know anyone to get.
Crap. Well, nice she responded.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. That was pretty cool.
Because I think most people would be like, actually, I have a little LinkedIn thing. I keep getting an email to an email link in invite to connect
okay.
with this girl that I don't recognize.
Okay.
Who's like some type of, like business, not consulting, but some type of communications thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't go to the email that I signed up LinkedIn with.
Oh.
Like I have, you know, a couple of Gmail accounts. I linked with LinkedIn with one of my Gmails.
But you're getting the invite to another
yeah.
one.
And I actually, when I click on the link, it said, "Hi, Wayne. Do you want to connect with da-da-da?" So I'm like, I'm not Wayne.
So some Wayne guy has logged in, has created a LinkedIn account with your
my
email.
Address.
Wow. I bet it's somewhat, like, you know how it is?
What
you know
is
how
that?
Sometimes when you sign up for stuff, they ask you to type in the email twice
yeah.
just to confirm it?
Yeah.
Like, the guy must have done it, and there's some, like, typo, like, something one-off or something.
Exactly.
And then did the typo twice.
Because before I figured that out, I looked for this girl on Facebook, and I thought, oh, maybe we have some friends in common or something, and
right.
maybe she met me at a show or, you know, she wants to,
right.
you know, some music-related thing. So I found her on Facebook, and I actually found her on Twitter. And when you click on her link on my email that I got,
yeah.
it actually goes right to her Twitter account and just has this little bio on her. But you couldn't really get in much information without logging into Twitter. I'm not on
right.
Twitter, so I was like, oh, screw that. I Facebooked her. And
you did? Wow.
I did, yeah.
Look
I said,
you.
Hey... And this is still before the Wayne thing.
Yes.
I Facebooked and I said, hey, I see even what looks like you're trying to get a hold of me on LinkedIn, but I don't know who you are, but maybe we met at some point.
Right.
If this is, and I wrote at the bottom, if this is not someone that you want to connect with, then please ignore.
Right.
Like, I put that in because I didn't
yeah.
want to come across as weird, you know?
Yeah, and did you get a response?
Nothing.
Oh.
So it was probably like, she was probably like, who the heck is that?
Right.
And her name was similar to the name of a girl that was with a she started like her a promotion promoter company like
promotions company
yeah for like setting up gigs in town and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I thought that was her at first, and I realized it wasn't. I was like, thank God, because I just didn't want to connect,
right?
Because we didn't hit it off.
Hmm.
Anyway. Which is rare, because usually I hit it off with most people.
Yes, yeah.
But didn't hit off with her. Not that I disliked her or anything, it's just business-wise, it didn't work.
Right.
But yeah, so yeah, I never heard back, and I've been meaning to contact LinkedIn about it, but you know how it is when you try to get a hold of some person lost in a big company.
Right.
Like Podbean. But we won't go there.
No.
In case they listen to this and then we're really screwed.
Of course.
Our hosting company. Anyway, and you just think, oh, well, of course no one's going to get back to me. And it's always when you don't think they will that they actually do, and vice versa, right?
Right. And did someone get back to you?
No.
Oh. Did Libby Davies respond on behalf of LinkedIn? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. Libby Davies, on the other hand, always gets back to me, which is great.
Pretty cool.
Which is very cool. Whether you agree with her politics or not,
the woman knows how to handle her or take care of her constituency.
Absolutely, 100%. So, no doubt about it. So, new dude, boot it.
Well, with that being said, we're at 48 minutes, and it is so hot in here. So
oh,
let's,
crap,
let's,
yeah.
Let's call
let's
it
go.
A day.
Want some ice cream?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, guys, out there, the three people listening, you can't have any.
Yeah, three of the 96 people on our Facebook group, I think. Okay, well, thanks for listening. You can catch us on iTunes and at the.matrix.com.
Yes, and as we've been threatening to post new pictures, we might actually do that one day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to redesign our site so it doesn't look so autumn, but we'll do that in autumn probably by the time we get to it. We'll do another autumn look. Autumnal. So yeah, thanks again. And remember to wear seatbelts. No more crashes. Any other last words, Jesse?
You took the last phrase out of my...
It's crazy today. So we'll end it there. 50 minutes. Enjoy.